Violinist Avery Shea tells us, "The first time I heard the Brahms Sextet No. 1 was not in concert, but in a sci-fi TV show, Star Trek: The Next Generation. That's a show that I'd watched with my dad frequently while growing up, and I encountered the Brahms Sextet No. 1 second movement through episode 23 of season 3, titled Sarek. Set in the future, The Next Generation follows a galactic ship named the USS Enterprise and its crew through the exploration of the universe, where they encounter several alien species. Vulcans are an alien species on the show whose culture and mannerisms are built around logic and prohibit any expression of emotion. When the legendary Vulcan leader Sarek arrives on the USS Enterprise, he's invited to attend a concert in which the chamber group plays the second movement of the Brahms Sextet No. 1. As the opening notes of the violin solo waft over the audience, the camera zooms in on Sarek, revealing a single tear rolling down his face. Moved by the music, he is unable to contain his emotions any longer. This monumental scene is the first time that a Vulcan has ever shown any emotion, making the moment shocking and memorable. This episode is a clear example of the mixture of classical music and pop culture, she tells us. Although the audience for The Next Generation may be different from those who would normally find themselves at a classical music concert, the significance of this music in the show has led many people to search up and listen to the Brahms Sextet themselves. This allows people to be exposed to music beyond what they are used to. I enjoy the thought that hundreds of years into the future, Brahms will still be revered among humans and will be moving to our new intergalactic friends, moving like the music was to Sarek. And I will be performing as the first violinist for the second movement of the Brahms Sextet with chamber music Amici, like Lieutenant Commander Data, who performed in that concert. I hope that I can summon the emotion to bring even a Vulcan to tears. That from violinist Avery Shea of Chamber Music Amici, citing Star Trek The Next Generation, episode 23 from season 3, titled Sarek. The shipboard concert actually begins with String Quartet No. 19 by Mozart, known as the Dissonant Quartet. So, from the depths of outer space to the depths of winter here on planet Earth, we'll have a chance to hear music by Mozart and Brahms this weekend, presented by the Northeastern Pennsylvania Chamber Music Society. The program will feature the very sextet by Johannes Brahms, No. 1 in B-flat major, that brought a tear to the eye of a stoic Vulcan, and an arrangement of a much-loved work by Mozart, originally for violin, viola, and small orchestra, the Grand Sesteto Concertante, as it has become known in this arrangement. We had a chance to welcome to the WVIA studios the founders of the Northeastern Pennsylvania Chamber Music Society, who will host this concert, violinist John Vida and violist Amy Iwazumi, and they stopped in at the WVIA studios to say a bit about and play a bit of the works to be featured. First, some history, though.
Northeastern Pennsylvania Chamber Music Society, we're a 501 nonprofit organization. Our mission is to foster the growth of chamber music in the Northeastern Pennsylvania region.
And you've celebrated 10 years, right?
Yep, this is our 10th anniversary season.
You have to educate as you go along, don't you?
Indeed, and education is a big part of what we do, and we're actually on the second year of our Young Apprentice program, and they'll actually be helping out for our concerts next week.
They're high school level, is that what they are?
Correct, high school string players.
We always love the choices you make. There's one anchor piece, at least, that you want to do, and everything falls into place. Tell us what you were thinking in almost orchestral terms.
So we did a string sextet program 2 years ago, also in January, and I think that this concert came out of that. We had such a great time, and it was great music with great players. We decided we wanted to do something similar again, and it was really well received, I think, by the audience. So that's where that started. We programmed the second sextet of Brahms on that first concert, coupled with a Tchaikovsky Souvenir de Florence. So we wanted to tackle the first sextet of Brahms on this concert. So that was the grounding piece for us.
And you have some names of guests we recognize. Lisa Caravan is one we recognize, but a violinist, for example, whose name I don't remember from your past.
Yep, Ambroise Elbron. We actually have two Frenchmen joining us. Ambroise is originally from France, as well as the second violist, Aurelien Petterzoli, but they've both been in the States for quite some time. Ambroise, Amy and I, we met him in Puerto Rico for an orchestra festival that we had been doing for a number of years. And so we hit it off with him. This was several years ago, and we've been friends ever since. And he's come and played on our series once in the past, actually, for that previous sextet concert.
And is he the one who's in the West?
Yes, he lives in Los Angeles, but teaches in Las Vegas at the university there.
And tell us about the violist.
Actually, I have never met him in person yet.
Yeah, Amy's never met Aurelien. So I know Aurelien through a mutual friend, and we got connected. I mean, this is the first time I'm going to be playing with him, actually. He's a fantastic player, so I'm sure it's going to work well.
What are the considerations then when you are, we know we've talked to you many times about string quartets and piano quartets and different combinations, but six players, you've already done it and enjoyed it. What are the special considerations? Are there any for you?
Being able to play is obviously a basis, but we just enjoy getting together and playing chamber music. And even if someone is really great at playing, if they're very unpleasant to work with, then it just it's not pleasant for everybody else.
Well, so. Especially because we are all coming from different places. You know, of course, Ambroise is coming from the West Coast. Lisa's coming from Rochester, Aaron's coming from West Virginia, Aurelien's coming from New York. So we're all coming from different places, and we have to put the program together in such a short amount of time that we have to, trust is a big part of it. We like to engage people that we trust and we know that are up to the task.
Brahms has been an important part of the programming schedule over the years, and there are many good reasons for that. What are the strengths, what are the delights of Brahms as he thinks in terms of six string players, whether it's the first or the second sextet? What was he exploring and what did he develop that makes it fun for you or rewarding?
Well, playing Brahms is always rewarding because it's not just one part that takes the spotlight and then everyone else is accompanying. It's all very blended, and every instrument has some sort of highlight moment. And he famously writes in a way that all the melodies and harmonies are woven together. So working that out and playing together is always a challenge and a fun thing to work out.
I think, you know, especially in the first sextet too, the viola and cello get featured much more prominently, I think, than usual. Not that the first violin doesn't have the melody a lot, of course it does, but, you know, the first movement starts off with the cello, the second movement starts off with the viola, the last movement starts off with the cello again.
So if we think about mathematics, two violins, two violas, two cellos, and you're talking about, Amy, interweaving, do the two violins converse with each other, the two violas converse with each other, the cellos converse with each other, and you all are conversing as groups?
Sometimes yes, a lot of times no, though. In fact, in the Brahms, in the first movement, I'm thinking very opening, when the first violin comes out, he couples the first violin and the first viola together. And that's a coupling that he uses a lot in that throughout that piece.
We know also that people are interested in the biographical impact of lives of composers on their music. Is there anything to say about Brahms as he is writing this particular piece? We know, for example, in the Requiem, his mother passed away, and people talk about a nod to her in the Requiem.
Yeah, I mean, with the sextet, it's, I think, around that time when he was starting to grapple with his first symphony. And that's part of the theme of this program. It's titled Symphonic Overtones. And you can hear that symphonic aspect in Brahms's first sextet here. You know, like many of his chamber works, it can be very grand and large scale at times. And of course, with the Mozart, originally was an orchestra piece. Well, orchestra and two soloists.
When we talk about the Mozart, you have given us some good notes about it, and we know that he was chomping at the bit to get out of Salzburg. He didn't like working
right.
with the archbishop, and he had done some traveling, and he was exposed to some new forms, and this was a form that he encountered on his travels, Paris maybe?
Right, yep. And then I think this piece was right at the time when he was, as you said, chomping at the bit to get out of Salzburg, and right before he left for Vienna. Yeah, it's an interesting take on the piece. As I said, it was originally for solo violin, solo viola, and orchestra, which included, of course, strings, but also two oboes and two horns. So actually somewhat of a pared-down orchestra. However, somebody anonymously in the early 19th century took it upon themselves to arrange this for a string sextet. And I think, Amy, it was you discovered this?
Yeah, I was just looking at string sextet repertoire, and I saw Grand Sestetto Concertante.
By Mozart, right?
Yeah, and I was like, wait, when did Mozart write that? And then I quickly realized it wasn't him that did it. But at first I thought, oh, is this going to be just, you know, solo first violin and then first viola playing the solo part and then everyone else playing? No, it was completely redone so that everybody gets a little piece of the action. And the first cello actually takes quite a bit of the solo parts. So the first viola has some things, but not as much as the first cello.
And one of the challenges actually is that we're so, as string players, you know, used to and fond of course, the original, this piece, because it's such a wonderful, wonderful piece. So in the sextet version, whoever arranged it, you know, obviously divvies out the parts different ways, so it's a little bit unexpected. And some of the articulations are different than the original. And in fact, there's an added 8 measures in the last movement, which make no sense, so we're going to cut them out and play it as the original version. But then you have to go back and forth between playing a solo bit and then pretending you're a horn, because the horn doesn't exist in this version, but the music is still there.
And you were mentioning Symphony No. 1 of Brahms, and we know that Brahms was wrestling with the shadow of Beethoven over his creative life and was really having trouble coming to terms with Beethoven's example and what Beethoven had done. But you hear some of the ability to write for strings in an orchestral way in the sextet?
I think so, and just the way that Brahms, for example, in some of his symphonies, he'll couple like the violas and the horns together, right? He knows how to create timbres by layering different instruments together. And I think that skill is apparent in the sextet as well.
Would you like to give us some samples and then we'll talk a little bit more?
Yeah, talk as we go.
What will you start with?
So I thought we'd start with playing some of the first movement of the Brahms. As I said, the cello introduces the main theme, and then when the first violin comes in, Brahms couples that with the first viola. And for the first little section of this piece, the viola and the violin are sometimes playing in unison, but sometimes weaving in and out of each other. So it's a really interesting effect.
Thank you.
very good example. We get the sense of what you were just describing about him, Amy, at the start.
Yeah, and there's constantly places like that in this piece. It's not just obviously the first violin and first viola, but all the instruments are layered in that way.
And is there a spirit of the overall piece? Would we say it's a happy piece? Is it a Sturm und Drang piece? Is there any way to characterize it without trivializing it?
I think a grand sense of optimism. It's delightful music. Not cheap in any way, though.
And you tell us the second movement opens with a big moment for the viola.
And so that's the theme that he uses in this movement, and it's a theme in variations, actually. He takes that melody and reworks it throughout the movement.
How many movements?
Four movements in total. Yep, and the third movement is a rather short for Brahms standard scherzo with the trio section. And then the last movement, again, starts with the cello with the main melody, and it's a traditional classical form, a rondo form, so this melody that you hear in the beginning keeps coming back over and over. But also, you know, with Brahms, he doesn't do it the same way every time.
He's smiling there.
Yeah. So as we said, you know, in the original, Mozart wrote this for solo violin and solo viola. Interestingly, though, the piece is in E-flat. The original viola part, though, that Mozart wrote was in D major. And he intended that, I don't think just to make it easier for the viola, but so by tuning the viola up a half step, it makes it a little bit brighter and probably better to project and match the violin sound. In this arrangement, though, everything's in E-flat. So we'll play the opening where the solo violin and viola enter for the first time. And this is one of the most, I've heard this word describe it, sublime moments in Mozart. And he's so great at this, like taking one note and kind of hovering it in the air and then coming in and out of the texture. I mean, he does that in this. He does that in like his third violin concerto. There's a famous A that just goes... Right, and when you're playing it, you have to think about what the orchestra's doing in behind there, but this is another one of those moments in here.
Do that again with the held note, please. We talked a little bit about Mozart wanting to get out of Salzburg, and he had already traveled to Paris and Mannheim, and he was exposed to some new forms there and was apparently trying some of these ideas out in this piece. The opening might be something that he was trying, or the double concerto nature of it, or...
Yeah, and as the name implies, it is kind of like symphony slash concerto, right? And interestingly, the part that we just played for you, that's one of the few times when the solo instruments are actually playing together. Usually they're just imitating one another, actually. It's always back and forth, and it's very few times that it actually comes together. The very opening, though, it's interesting. It's a bit funny, I don't know, whimsical, right? And again, it's a little bit different in the arrangement, because the dynamic, as mentioned, the articulations are different. Some of the dynamics are actually different in this, but we're going to default to Mozart's original, which is these sforzandos in kind of a piano and then a sudden burst of energy. So it's like two false starts and then we get going. ¶¶
we're hearing you two play, but we're imagining then what's going on with the other four of you all when you two are doing that.
Again, Mozart, like Brahms, is great at layering, so there's always kind of a different texture. In the very beginning, though, everyone is playing those chords together, and then we start diverging into different parts. But then, again, the original also had oboes and horns, so as we're playing, we kind of have to imagine those missing instruments playing as well. And there's spots in the first movement, especially, though, I think in the last movement, where we have to go back and forth kind of really quickly between solo parts, orchestra parts, imitating horns, imitating oboes.
Each of you will come in having practiced your own, and maybe you two work with each other in those spots, but six of you have to get together and sort that all out pretty quickly, yep. As you say.
So I actually did a little bit of prep work, something I maybe don't normally do quite as much as I usually do, is I went through and marked the score and sent it to everybody, just because there's so much discrepancy between the original and the sextet version. So at least so we have somewhere to go on. We talk maybe about the second movement briefly. I mean, the second movement, and again, we talked about context with this piece. This was also around the time right after Mozart's mother had passed away. And, you know, the Adder movements are in E flat major, very bright, very fun, energetic, joyous, optimistic. The second movement, though, is kind of the opposite of that. It's in C minor, can be very dark at times, but also very, very beautiful and very operatic. And it's based on this four-note motif that he starts with just very simply in the first violin. And then later on, he takes that and starts developing it and ornaments around it, and it kind of extends the melody. And again, it's like this trade-off of the melody in a way that you don't quite know when or if it's ever going to end. But eventually it does, of course.
Where will you be performing this time?
On Thursday, January 15, we will be at the Hayfield House at Penn State Wilkes-Barre in Dallas, PA. And that is at 7 o'clock. And on Saturday, January 17, that's at 3 o'clock, we will be at the First Presbyterian Church of Bloomsburg.
And the Hayfield House has been a wonderful place for you to perform, intimate, like a chamber setting, right?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite places, I think, in the area to perform. Great acoustics, it's intimate, beautiful space, and I hope we get some snow before there, so you're looking out onto the snowy field.
And then the church setting, you've performed there too, you know that, acoustic.
Mm-hmm. It's very nice, a lot of wood, and it's a little bit interesting in there because it's a little bit circular, and so all the seats kind of point to the center, middle.
But it also, the floor slants.
It's a little slanted.
So it's funny that you can kind of hear the sound projecting off the floor and then bouncing up. It's kind of neat, actually.
Yeah, and it's not too big, so there's not too much reverb, and I love playing at that church.
Overall, it feels like a good program for January, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think in just this moment in general, I think we can all use some beautiful optimism in our lives.
Violinist John Vida, violist Amy Iwazumi, co-founders of the Northeastern Pennsylvania Chamber Music Society, marking its 10th anniversary. And they were inviting us to a program titled Symphonic Overtones, the first performance Thursday, January 15th at 7 in the evening, and that will be at Hayfield House at Penn State Wilkes-Barre.
That's 44 University Drive in Dallas, just outside Wilkes-Barre in the Back Mountain. That's Thursday, this Thursday, at 7 at the Hayfield House at Penn State Wilkes-Barre. And then again, the program will be presented on Saturday, this Saturday, January 17th, at 3 o'clock at the First Presbyterian Church of Bloomsburg. Same program. For more information on the web, nepacms.org, nepacms.org.